translation, Lord Krishna was sent by Arjuna into the assembly as the spiritual master of the whole world, and although his words were heard by some, like Bhishma, as pure nectar, it was not so for the others, who were completely bereft of the last farthing of past pious works. The king, Dhritarashtra or Duryodhana, did not take the words of Lord Krishna very seriously. Responsively, Lord Krishna was sent by Arjuna into the assembly as the spiritual master of the whole world. And although his words were heard by some, like Bhishma, as pure nectar, it was not so for the others, who were completely bereft of the last farthing of past pious works. The king, Dhritarashtra or Duryodhana, did not take the words of Lord Krishna very seriously. Purport. Lord Krishna, who is the spiritual master of the entire universe, accepted the duty of a messenger and, deputed by Arjuna, went to the assembly of King Dhritarashtra on a peace mission. Krishna is everyone's lord, yet because he was the transcendental friend of Arjuna, he gladly accepted the role of messenger, exactly like an ordinary friend. That is the beauty of the Lord's behavior with his pure devotees. He reached the assembly and spoke about peace, and the message was relished by Bhishma and other great leaders because it was spoken by the Lord himself. But due to the exhaustion of the pious results of their past deeds, Duryodhana, or his father Dhritarashtra, did not take the message very seriously. That is the way of persons who have no credit of pious deeds. By past pious deeds, one may become the king of a country, but because the result of the pious acts of Duryodhana and company were dwindling, it became evident from their actions that they were sure to lose the kingdom to the Pandavas. The message of Godhead is always like nectar to the devotees, but it is just the opposite to the non-devotees. Sugar candy is always sweet to a healthy man, but it tastes very bitter to a person suffering from jaundice. So here we see this chapter is called Questions by Vidura, and the section we're covering right now is talking about, or is going to give the explanation of why Vidura left the palace. And you may remember back in the first canto, the 13th chapter, it talks about how Vidura returned to the palace and then instructed his brother Dhritarashtra on transcendental subject matter, and actually was explaining to him, you know, that he should give up the palace life and go practice a life of austerity in order to overcome the effect of his karma. And it's interesting because we see that a similar thing is happening here. It happened earlier on in that the sages of Namisharanya, they heard this conversation or this discussion from Suta Goswami in the first canto, 13th chapter, and the conversation went on to other things. It seems like the conversation tends to meander around a bit in the beginning stages because a lot of backstory going on that was necessary to explain in order to give them an idea of the overall situation or the overall sort of dynamics of the whole situation. And so what's happened at the end of the last chapter is the sages of Namisharanya have asked, or Shonaka Rishi has asked Suta Goswami, oh, please tell us more about Vidura. You know, how did this come about? And similar also, we see that in the first canto that there was a discussion about Parikshit and how he was sitting down on the bank of the Jamuna to fast or death. And so again, the sages would ask, well, can you tell us more about that? Because they want to hear more about that. So we see in the 12th chapter of the first canto how the conversation about turned back to the topics of Parikshit. And then it started to focus on... It started to focus on his birth and his activities and how ultimately he met with Sukadeva Goswami, and that's like the conclusion of the first canto. And so similar thing is happening here, where the sages of Namisharanya have asked Suta Goswami to please talk about Vidura. And because what was going on was, you may recall from the second canto, a lot of it's talking about how the Lord's interacting with the material nature and the Lord's prowess, etc. And it's not that they're not interested in that, because obviously it's very interesting topics, because it's discussing the potency of the Lord. But they're really interested to hear about these great devotees. You know, for instance, Parikshit Maharaj, how is it that he was able to sit down? He gave up everything. He gave up kingdom. He gave up everything. And just was willing to sit down and fast or death and hear topics about Krishna. And this is very interesting to them, because they're discussing transcendental subject matters. And the same here with Vidura, is we see that Vidura, as was explained in the first canto, how he had given up everything. He went traveling for about 30 or 35 years, went on pilgrimage. So just before the battle of Kurukshetra, he left. And you'll see here in the subsequent verses, he's explaining to Dhritarashtra what's going to happen. And it's not like he's seeing the future or anything like that. He's understanding by Duryodhana's impious acts, by his hatred of the Pandavas, and he's always looking to do ill to the Pandavas, that this is going to bring about misfortune for him. And he's telling him that this will bring about the destruction of the dynasty, because the Kaurava dynasty was founded on piety, it was founded on religious activities. But Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra were giving that up just due to attachment to being in charge of the kingdom. And as we know, Duryodhana wasn't actually the rightful heir, because his father, Dhritarashtra, was blind, therefore he was unqualified to be the king. And the actual rightful heir was the sons of Pandu, because Pandu was the emperor. Yet he was thinking, well, because my brother Pandu has died, therefore I should be the next in line. But because of his lack of qualification, but not just materially, also spiritually, he was unqualified. Because not only was he materially blind, he was also spiritually blind. He couldn't actually understand what the duty of a king was. And Yudhisthira, on the other hand, was actually a very, very saintly person. He was very, very, actually, sometimes Bhima would criticize him. He says, you're more of a Brahmana than a Kshatriya, because he was inclined towards renunciation. He was inclined towards brahminical activities. But that's very much in line with his father, because his father, Pandu, he gave up living in the palace and he went to live in the forest. He actually preferred that life. He preferred the life of an ascetic, of a renunciate. But still he had his duties as a king. So we see here that what's happening is that Arjuna sent Lord Krishna as a messenger to the Kaurava court to try and avoid the war. And of course they didn't listen. And even we understand that Duryodhana tried to capture Krishna. Because he didn't accept, that Krishna was the supreme person of God. He thought he's a powerful person, he's a king, something like that, He just had some very, very mundane ideas of who Krishna is. And it's interesting that even the seniors in the palace warned him against this. Vidura warned him against it, Bhishma warned him against it, Dronacharya warned him against it. They said, even Kripacharya warned against it. It won't work out well for you. Because especially Bhishma knew clearly who Krishna is. He was fully aware of that. But Duryodhana, it's like this statement from the Gita, it says, Maya Prahita Gyana. His intelligence was just completely stolen by illusion. Even though it's right in front of him, he couldn't see. You know, even though there's so many so much evidence of how Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead, so many great feats he'd done, and even some people were concluding, oh, he's just a magician. You know, he's just like playing some conjuring tricks to bewilder people. But they didn't actually accept he didn't accept the reality of Krishna. And the same is there for Shishupal and, you know, so many Dantavakra. You know, there's so many stories in the Krishna book we can see of how these powerful kings, you know, because they're bewildered or deluded about the actual reality of Krishna, they couldn't see Krishna's position as the Supreme Person of Godhead. Therefore, they tried, you know, as we see here, and also in the other, you know, Shishupal tried to, Dantavakra, you know, he tried to, well, he was pretending to be Krishna. He was, you know, trying to present himself as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so we see, you know, these people are bewildered by the illusory energy. And the nature of the illusory energy is just so powerful that even like a person who doesn't have any capacity as God may be deluded into thinking they're God or deluded. I was listening to a class yesterday and Prabhupada was talking about this. Where even they're so bewildered, they actually think that the universe has come about by their creation or by their power or whatever. They have all these kind of nonsense ideas, but no evidence to support that. They make so many claims, but there's no evidence to support these claims. So they're very, very much deluded by the effects of the material nature. And Duryodhana was, you know, in a similar category in that he was so deluded by the concept of being the controller and the enjoyer, that he couldn't see what was right in front of him. He couldn't see Krishna as the Supreme Person of Godhead. And there's an interesting statement in the Bhagavatam where it says, Pashanapi na pashyati. Even though they're seeing, still they do not see. Even though Krishna was standing directly in front of him, and Krishna was manifesting a partial universal form, still, he could not accept that Krishna was the Supreme Person of Godhead. He just thought, oh, he's just some powerful person. He's just a mystic. He can do different things like that. He knows something about mystic yoga or whatever. But he didn't see that he was God. Whereas we see Bhishma Dev, when Krishna manifested this partial universal form, he was offering prayers, he's offering pranams to Krishna. So this is the effect of Krishna's maya. And this pastime here, where Vidura, you know, casts aside his bow and arrows, leaves him at the doorway to the palace and just leaves, is really interesting because we see how Vidura, he was seeing how the Lord's potency was working, because he was simultaneously seeing how the Lord's Mahamaya was influencing Duryodhana. So Duryodhana and also Dhritarashtra, they were, you know, trying to usurp the kingdom, and they were disrespecting Krishna. They didn't, you know, Krishna came there, delivered a message. They didn't listen at all, not interested. Yet he could see how Krishna was making this arrangement. Krishna's yoga maya potency was making this arrangement for him to give up this connection with the court and go on pilgrimage to purify himself. So he was seeing how the same, by the same act, that the Lord's potency, you know, and Prabhupada explains it that he talks about electrical energy and mentions how an expert electrical engineer can use the same energy for different purposes. Like an electrical engineer can make a machine that can either heat or can cool using the same energy. So in the same way, Krishna's energy, his yoga maya potency, his maha maya potency, same energy in a sense, it can have different effects. For the devotee, it's facilitating the development of Krishna consciousness, facilitating them coming closer to Krishna. But for the non-devotee, it's like the curtain. As Kunti explains, Maya Javanakachanam, how this curtain of the deluding potency covers them so they can't see the reality that's right in front of them. And it's kind of interesting how it functions. Like, you know, for instance, you look at pastimes like when Yasoda Mayi looked into Krishna's mouth after Balaram had accused him of swallowing dirt. She looks into Krishna's mouth and she sees the whole creation. in Krishna's mouth, and she sees the universes, she sees, you know, everything going on, and then she sees herself. And she sees Krishna on her lap. And then she becomes overwhelmed with parental affection. And it's like that never happened. Krishna's deluding potency is so powerful that these things, even though you have a really tangible and a forceful experience, due to the effects of Krishna's Maya potency, whether it's Maha Maya or Yoga Maya, it's like it never happened. The living entity becomes completely covered by the effect of that potency. And we see, you know, with Duryodhana, it's like he has no perception, he has no understanding of what Krishna's manifesting before him. He has no perception. Even though so many great personalities, Vidura, and Duryodhana accepted that Vidura was a great personality. He understood he was an impartial advisor. But still, he couldn't accept his words because it was going against what he wanted. He just couldn't accept it out of false ego. So Vidura is advising him. Vidura was completely impartial. Vidura is saying, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You should hear what he has to say. You know? And the same with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra couldn't hear it. He just couldn't hear it because he was attached. You know, because, you know, even though Duryodhana was the effective ruler, out of respect, Dhritarashtra was sitting on the throne. So he was attached to the respect, he was attached to the comfort, he was attached to the whole situation because everyone was bowing down to him, things like that. And so he was attached to that. And this is something that's very, very dangerous in this material world is you know, when people get positions, they become intoxicated by the effect of having that position. They become overwhelmed by the adoration, the glory, all this sort of stuff. And this is the way the material nature works, in that when we get positions in this material world, we start to think that we're something special. We start to think that we're a great personality. But someone who's intelligent, especially in devotional service, we see this happen quite a lot, is people might get a position, they might become the Sankirtan leader or the temple commander or the temple president or the GBC or whatever. And it happens that people become bewildered by this and think there's something special. But it's really important for us to understand our actual position, because all these things that all these so-called positions we get, we need to see it's a service. It's just a service. We're rendering some type of service for the pleasure of Krishna. But if we start to think that now I have this position, I become a great person, I become this, I become that, see how important I am, then it's very easy to become bewildered. But if we're able to maintain humility, if we're able to remember our actual position as Krishneta Nityadas, this is my actual position. I'm not any of these external things, because all these things, even though we may have a position in material society, it's very much related to the body. It's got nothing to do with the essence of who we are, because these positions, as we've seen, they come and go as the body comes and goes. But the connection with Krishna, that's eternal. Our position as a servant of Krishna, that never changes. Even if we're bewildered about who we are, still, There's the constitutional nature of the position, as Lord Chaitanya explains. He says, Krishna Nityadas. And this is because of our tatastha nature. Because we're a manifestation simultaneously different, but not different from Krishna. So that never changes. That's our eternal constitutional position. Everything else we experience in this material world is temporary. And this is what's happening with Duryodhana. He has this temporary position. And we can see, you know, anyone who understands the story can see, it was temporary. Because ultimately he was killed by Bhima. So it was a temporary position. Even though he was thinking he was the king of the world or the emperor of the world, very, very powerful position, but it's temporary. And just as the body is temporary, any position we may have in this material world is temporary. So someone who's intelligent doesn't become attached to this, understands that it's temporary. And this is the example that Vidura is giving here. He wasn't attached to it. You know, he had this position. You know, he was the brother of the emperor of the world, and he was his most confidential advisor. And so, you know, he had a very, very big position, if you like. But he gave it up at a moment. And we see the same with Parikshit. You know, the example is very, very similar in my mind, at least. Whereas Parikshit, he was the emperor of the world. He was the direct controller of the entire world. Yet, to pursue the path of Krishna consciousness, he gave it up. Just like it was nothing. And there's that line from the Sad Goswami Astakam where it says, Sada Tucha Vat. And Prabhupada would quote this a lot. This Tucha means insignificant. Yeah? So they gave up, Sada means everything. They gave up everything like it was nothing. And if you look at the Goswamis, particularly Sanatana, Rupa, Raghunath, Das Goswami, you know, Sanatana and Rupa were the prime minister and the treasurer, or the chief financial officer of Nawab Hussain Shah, who was a very, very powerful king. And you know, they actually ran the whole kingdom, because Nawab Hussain Shah was always engaged in going fighting wars and stuff, so he basically left the kingdom in the hands of Rupa and Sanatana. But they gave it up like it was nothing. They had unlimited wealth, they had, you know, power, anything they wanted, they had access to it. But they gave it up like it was insignificant. And then they lived their lives as mendicants. And the same we see with Raghunath Das Goswami. His father and uncle were extraordinarily rich. And Prabhupada mentions, maybe I've got the numbers wrong, but I think it was like their income was something like 30,000 rupees a day, which, you know, by today's standards seems like nothing. But if you take that back 500 years ago, 30,000 rupees per day was a lot of money. And so he had, you know, access to incredible wealth and comfort, you know, of life or whatever. But he gave it up like it was nothing. He wasn't interested in it. And we see the same with these, with Parikshit, with Vidura. And you know, if you look at all these pious kings that are described in the Vedic texts, you know, so many, you know, Ranti Dev and Yadu and Pandu and all these great personalities, they were able to give up this position and wealth as insignificant. But if you look at today, you know, when people get into power, just like there was an example of you know, a leader in America recently was trying to falsify election results so he could stay in power. And we see, like people will do anything they can to cling on to power. They're so attached to their position in this material world because they have nothing else. They don't understand what the purpose of life is. They think the purpose of life is to accumulate as much as they can. You know, to have as much wealth, to have as many possessions, to have as many followers as they possibly can. This is the goal of life for them. But for someone who's a transcendentalist, they understand that this is actually a distraction. And we see with Vidura, this will become evident as this chapter unfolds, is he saw all the trappings of the palace as simply being a distraction on his real purpose of deepening his attachment to Krishna. Because attachment, and this is explained in the third chapter of the Gita, attachment to things in this material world bring about bondage. This is karma bandhana, Krishna explains. But actually, the real purpose of life is to perform yajna for the satisfaction of Vishnu. This is yajna tat kamano yajna loko yam karma bandhana. That, you know, by performing yajna, we please Vishnu. And we become detached. But you know, if we don't perform that yajna, the same activity will bring about our bondage in this material world. And this is what Vidura is demonstrating here. Because he was a transcendentalist, and this is why these sages of Naimisharanya are interested to hear about Vidura, because he was a great transcendentalist. He was able to give up everything as insignificant, because it is insignificant. It's nothing. If you really look at it, you know, in the cosmic scheme of things, like whatever possessions we might have in this life, they're all temporary. You know, you may have the nicest car, you may have the nicest house, the nicest whatever, but they all fall apart. Everything's temporary in this material world. Even this body, which we're so attached to, is temporary. It appears in this material world, it grows, it you know, remains for some time, has byproducts, it dwindles and it vanishes. Everything in this material world dwindles and vanishes. Nothing is eternal, except the soul. Yeah? And if we analyze the nature of the soul, the soul's eternal position is as a servant of Krishna. So someone who's intelligent, I was saying this before, someone who's intelligent will understand what the position of the soul is, what the nature of the self is, and use all their time and endeavor to develop that relationship, to develop that awareness of who we are, and to act in that capacity. And that's why this story is so important for us, and this is why the sages in Abhisharanya were interested in this story, because they saw how Vidura gave up everything to pursue Krishna consciousness. And it's the same as I was saying before with Parikshit. They saw the same thing with Parikshit. He gave up everything as it was insignificant simply to pursue his Krishna consciousness. He sat down on the bank of the Ganges and just wanted to hear topics about Krishna. And that's what Vidura is doing now. He's giving up the palace, and he goes on pilgrimage for 30, 35 years, and then finally he meets with Uddhava. You know, he came to Prabhaschetra, and when he got to Prabhaschetra, he found out that all the Yadus and the Kurus had gone. They had a fight, and Krishna and Balaram killed them all. And then he was a little bit kind of actually more than a little bit. He was completely distressed about that, so he was kind of wandering around in a daze, and he happened upon Uddhava, and Uddhava had just left that environment. And then he knew Uddhava as a great confidential devotee of Krishna, a very, very elevated soul. So then he started to, furthered his spiritual quest, if you like, because the whole, Prabhupada explains in a purport here why Vidura he went on this quest instead of going directly to Krishna, because he could have gone and seen Krishna, but he felt himself contaminated by the association of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. And so he wanted to purify himself so that he could directly approach Krishna. And then when he finally did get to Prabhaschetra, Krishna had already... He met Krishna. No, hang on, what happened? He got to Prabhaschetra and Krishna had finally departed. Somehow or other he met with Uddhava, and then Uddhava had mentioned that Krishna was thinking about him as he was departing. And so Vidura was very touched by this, and he started to ask Vidura about Krishna. So he was talking about his pastimes outside of Vrindavan, his pastimes inside of Vrindavan. And then what happened was Uddhava became overwhelmed. We'll see this in the next few chapters. Uddhava became overwhelmed by separation from Krishna, so he instructed him to go to Maitreya. And then Maitreya, you'll see the whole third and fourth cantos essentially is the discussion between Maitreya and Vidura, talking about all these different aspects of this devotional science. All right, any comments or questions on that? Very well, Tatvitru, nice to see you. Description of who?
Congregation, Roman Caesar. He came to Egypt.
Julius Caesar, yeah. Yeah.
So
Yeah, Krishna answers that in a couple of places in the Gita, but basically he says, Bhakti Mama Vijanati Yavan, that only, you know, by bhakti can you understand who I am. And other places is only by bhakti can you understand me as I'm standing before you now. So the point is, and Prabhupada's making this point here in this purport, how Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra's pious credit was basically spent. You know, it was dwindling. And they were so impious, but they're actually bringing about their death. And then we see, you know, and it's quite common that you'll see that people believe that Brahma is God, people believe that Shiva is God, people believe that Durga, Surya, you know, any great personality, they're willing to accept as God. This is because they don't really have an understanding. They're not following the path of bhakti. You know, because if you look at the differences between, say, Shiva, Brahma, and Vishnu or Krishna, you know, you'll see like Brahma, he in his Brahma Samhita, who's he offering prayers to? He says, Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. He says, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadi Radi Govinda Savakaranaka. He's declaring that Krishna is the origin of all. He has no other origin. He has no cause. He's the cause of all causes. If you look at all these other personalities, they have a cause. Shiva has a cause. You know, it talks in the Bhagavatam about how Shiva came into being. You know, it talks about how, in the Bhagavatam also, we see it talks about how Brahma was born on the... It talks about how Brahma was born on the lotus flower. Even though he had no material mother and father, still he had a cause. But where does it talk about Krishna's cause? It doesn't, because he had no cause. Of course, there's the pastimes in the 10th canto about how he appeared in this material world. But that's just a pastime of appearance. Whereas it discusses how Brahma had a cause. It discusses how Shiva had a cause. The scriptures give us clear understanding of how these personalities had a cause. But, and even we see that like some people in the first canto, I think it's chapter 3, it talks about how Krishna is the source of all incarnations. And some people, when they read that they see that it explains how, I think it's the 24th and 25th incarnation is Krishna and Balaram. But they don't bother to go up to, you know, there's a verse a little bit later where it mentions that it says, what's that verse? Ete chang shakala pungsan Krishna stu bhagavan swayam. Which Jiva Goswami defines as the most important verse in the Bhagavatam. This Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And he actually says that this is the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam, and that all verses in the Bhagavatam should be understood from this verse, or through the lens of that verse, understanding that there's all, you know, Krishna, you know, the Lord appears in so many different incarnations when there's a need, but, listen, this word tu means but, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the original personality of Godhead. So only through the eyes of Shastra can we understand. And the point is, the Bhagavatam is making that Krishna, he's the original personality of Godhead. And the pastimes, and it's interesting also in that we see that Kunti, in the 8th chapter of the first canto, she makes this statement of this Maya Jana Javikana Chanam, you know, how it's very difficult to understand Krishna, and actually one is covered by his deluding curtain, so it's very difficult to understand his human-like pastimes. Because she was talking about, you know, Krishna's childhood pastimes and how Mother Yasoda tied him up with a rope and was chastising him with a stick and things like that. And she's thinking, I can't understand this. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet your devotees are treating you like a naughty child. And then Bhishma Dev makes the same statement, that it's very difficult to understand Krishna's pastimes. She said, I'm actually bewildered by these pastimes. So even great devotees are bewildered about Krishna's pastimes. You know, and both Kunti and Prabhupada at the end of that section says Kunti's our Acharya. So she's a very, very elevated soul. And Bhishma is one of the Mahajans. So they're bewildered about Krishna's pastimes. It's not surprising we are. Okay. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You look at what's happening in your life. Is it bringing you closer to Krishna, or is it taking you away from Krishna? That's one way you could look at it. But I would, you know, broadly say that generally we're under the influence of Mahamaya. It's uncommon for people at our... I mean, I can talk from my perspective because I have no idea of your advancement in devotional service, but at least I can say from my perspective, 99.9% of the time I'm under the influence of Mahamaya. Because I'm not driven to surrender to Krishna. I'm not like, you know, I'm not sort of feeling that, you know, if I don't surrender to Krishna, I'll die. You know, if you look at the actions and the mood of these greatly advanced Vaishnavas, the thought of separation for Krishna is intolerable. You know, they'd rather give up their lives than to be separate from Krishna. Do you feel like that? So from that you could basically guess you're under the influence of Mahamaya. But you know, Yogamaya acts to bring the devotees closer to Krishna, acts to increase the remembrance of Krishna, acts to increase this thirst for Krishna consciousness, or this thirst for, you know, engaging with Krishna, or thinking about Krishna, or talking about Krishna, or hearing about Krishna. You know, when we start to develop that thirst, then we can understand we're getting a bit closer. But right now, I mean, we hear about it in the scriptures and we think, oh yeah, it'd be nice to be like that. It'd be nice to, you know, have this strong desire to serve Krishna. But if you read about or you hear about these great souls and the way they interact with Krishna and remember Krishna, you can understand we're quite a distance from that. But through the process of bhakti, we can get there in one life. Prabhupada, you know, he says that. And you just give one life to Krishna and you'll get there, without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah.
And he brought, he said, I never was separated from the spiritual master. He brought some deities with him, small deities. And he kind of established this verse that says, pure devotee is a place of pilgrimage. So when we consider, you know, how the Vidura's stature is.
Yeah, Prabhupada makes that comparison himself in the second chapter. See if I can find it quickly. I can't remember. I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the detail of it because I can't remember the exact verse. But he said that there's what's the word he uses? What is it? Not similarity, but he says that there's. He talks about how there's consistency in the lives of great devotees, and he mentions Vidura, Parikshit, and then he mentions himself, because you know, and we see how, and he's talking about deity worship, and that's why I know this well. He talks about how when he was a young man, Parikshit was shown how to worship the deity. It was Uddhava, I think he mentioned, and how Uddhava, when he was a child, that's right, he was talking about Uddhava, not Vidura, how Uddhava, when he was a child, he would he had some sort of deity of Krishna, and how when his mother would call him for prasad or for offering, you know, for eating or something like that, he would say, "No, I can't come. The offering's still going on for the deity." And then Prabhupada draws a comparison between himself and both Parikshit and Uddhava. You know, so we can see that there's this, in the lives of great devotees, there's the same kind of things are happening. So I guess you could make the same comparison with Vidura as well, but he definitely does make that comparison with Uddhava and Parikshit. So. I don't think it's worth. Yeah, we were class. I think day before, or was it yesterday in Soho Street? It was from 1:12:12. I think was it really 1:12:12? And the Prabhupada was making the point and the purport there that Parikshit was the great hero of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So his purpose in being born in this material world was to assist in the manifestation of the Bhagavatam. So yeah, that's his purpose. So yeah, I don't think it's working. Yeah. But the only one who can protect us in this material world is Krishna. Yeah, like Prahlad Maharaj uses that analogy of taking shelter of the fallible soldiers. People take shelter of their relatives, they take shelter of the king, they take shelter of the police, but no one can protect you. The only person who can protect you is Krishna. And he doesn't necessarily protect the material body, he protects us, the spirit soul. And the way he protects us is that he allows us never to forget him. And Kunti makes that wonderful prayer about, you know, she prays to, you know, was it Vipatashan Tutashashvat Tatra Tatra Jagatkaru Bhavato Dasham Yashat Apuna Bhavadashanam. That, you know, let the calamities come again and again. Which, you know, from our perspective seems like a very unusual prayer. I mean, who prays for calamities? But then she explains why. Because when the calamities come, I think of you. And when I think of you, I no longer have to fear repeated birth and death. So she's explaining what protection means. And protection means that we're always absorbed in thought of Krishna, because when we're absorbed in thought of Krishna, we don't have to fear anything in this material world. And on the thing of fearful, I was on the way up here, I was reading Burijanapur's, you know, comments on this section, and he's quoting a morning walk in Calcutta. Prabhupada was talking with Brahmananda, and Prabhupada was talking, you know, the Victoria Memorial in central Calcutta. Prabhupada, when it was being built, Prabhupada was a young man, and Prabhupada, he said there was a scaffolding covering the whole building, and he walked up on top of the scaffolding, you know, which is quite a high building, you know, it's like, yeah, a very big building. And then Brahmananda said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you were so brave." And Prabhupada said, "I am still brave. You know, I travel around the whole world on my own and give Krishna consciousness." So we can see that Prabhupada has actually, you know, set such a wonderful example for us to follow in Krishna consciousness. And you know, there's this you know, comparison between the lives of all these great souls is how they're completely absorbed in Krishna and how they're fearless. Because Parikshit, you know, he was going to be bitten by a snake bird, completely fearless. He sat down on the bank of the Jamuna, and he said to Sukadeva Goswami, "What is my duty?" Not, oh, please protect me from the snake. He wasn't interested in that. He's like, what is my duty? That's all he's interested in. What is the duty of one who's about to die? So we see there's this synergy between the lives of all these great souls. Thank you for the point. Okay, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.